This is a Pinball News production.
Hey, that's really great. Thank you, everybody. Let me get over here. Well, maybe not. How's everybody?
Great. Great.
That's good. Wow. What
is it?
Wow. It's really, really great. Thanks, everybody, for coming to see what's going on right now with us, with our company, with our game. That's really exciting. It's a really exciting day for me, personally, and I know a lot of you in the room that actually ordered games. A year ago, just about to the day, I think it was yesterday, I stood in this room, but I think it was set up differently. I might have been over there on the seat this way.
It was the next room.
It was the room over.
It was the room over, okay. So I remember my big reveal last year was opening up a tube, a cardboard tube, and unrolling like cabinet graphics to what could be, might be, maybe not be, you know, some kind of thing that we were going to make. You know, so this year, I actually have the happy pleasure. And this thing wasn't really my idea. I was just going to roll it in, and some of the guys said, nah, we'll put it under something. We'll make it a little dramatic. Some of the rich guys wanted to get, like, a fog machine and a big curtain. you know, I said, you know, I'll donate that money to the museum because they're trying to get a home. Anyway, this morning I made a donation, to the museum. And if you guys can get to $50,000 by your goal, I donated $1,000 this morning, right? So if you guys can get to, let's say, 50 grand by the end of that campaign, I'm giving you one of these games and you can auction off. Anybody who's ever actually plunged the silver ball onto a play field anywhere at any time in their life, they should be interested in supporting, preserving, continuing, growing, building anything, anywhere that promotes pinball. Whether that's electronic, whether it's on an iPhone, whether it's anywhere. It's all good. It's games. It's pinball. Look, we get to make games. What a wonderful thing we get to do. You know, we've got all kinds of things going on in our lives. So let's start at the beginning of this. Let's just somebody that's tall, just go over and
give it.
Pull that. Yeah, there you go. There's the gun. I'm trying not to break my topper. You know. That's why you need a tall guy. You guys. That was. I don't know if that was good for you, but that was good for me. That was a lot better than me opening that tube last year, rolling out those graphics. By the way, I don't think Rick Bartlett is here, is he? Rick, where's Rick? Rick printed those for me last year because we didn't even know how to print graphics, how backwards we were. And I proceeded to leave here at the show, go to Skomas and have my favorite Dungeons crab, go to the airport, leave the rental car. And when I got to the gate, I realized I left the tube with the graphics in the car.
Oh.
So that $500 I gave Rick was a donation, and somebody, they wound up at a dumpster somewhere, so I never sold them on eBay for sale, because that would have been kind of cool. You know, that's like somebody stole your tickets to Yankee Stadium, and you go find a guy in the seat. Hey, by the way, those are my tickets. What are you doing? Yeah. So first, you know, what I'd like to say is I'd like to thank all the people that invited me here, Ron Chan, you know, amazing, all of the volunteers, Michael, Michael, Scheiss, and, you know, everybody, I mean, you know, Mr. Miller, you know, all the people that are involved, and it's really an honor and a privilege for me to be here at all, to be able to stand here. I almost was not able to be here today, and I had to really agonize over whether I was going to come here or I was going to get my iPhone 5. And you know, when it comes to Apple devices, you know, I'm an Apple person. It's over $700 a share. Go out and buy Apple. I told you guys last year it was 3 and change. who bought it, probably bought one of his games, and then didn't buy it, probably figured we weren't going to build the game. So, you know, but, you know, pinball wins out over an Apple device for me anyway. So it was a pretty cool thing. You know, conventional wisdom is something that guides a lot of us in our lives. And conventional wisdom would probably say, you don't bring a product like this to a show like this with pinball people like us, that's really not complete. Because there's a lot of danger in that. You know, there's only one chance to make a first impression, and then, you know, things aren't complete on it. This is not the game you're going to get that comes to your house, and the rules aren't done. Welcome, come on in. You know, and those kind of things, and we'll go through it. And it's no excuses, because I never want to make an excuse. I want to explain. So, you know, conventional wisdom says those things in product development, let's say, not just in pinball. But, you know, if I subscribe to conventional wisdom, I wouldn't start a pinball company. So, how we did it, it's only because of our customers that believed in, I guess, first me, and then the other members of the team, and then in what we were doing, and as we built that community, and, you know, had that crazy Google group with more than 700 people on the group writing, wow, some interesting, crazy, cool things. And people say to me, how do you read that? How do you deal with that? What you know, these people say this stuff, and I love it all. The good, the bad, the ugly, you know, do I go to the other groups and read some of what they put on that? Sometimes yeah, sometimes no. Everybody's entitled to their opinion, I respect that. And so, you know, we stand here with a game that we're going to roll across the, actually we're going to carry it across the bridge, so like everything doesn't fall off of it, not that it would. This game yesterday, for those that were here when it arrived, we flew it across the country because we didn't ship it until Tuesday. We were playing around with it. We could have gone Monday and missed the pickup, so we had a flight over here, so it took a flight. And it went in a box that was a box we kind of rejected. We're not using that box, but okay, we put it in that box. And it was definitely dropped because the pallet was on top of the game in splinters. I think, you know, Martin was there, he took pictures, and the side of the box was open. And we opened it, and there were no bumps and bruises on the game. So I thought that was a pretty cool test. Another drop test that we really didn't plan. And I think it would have got another drop test if not for a few of you that were here when it arrived on the truck yesterday, and the guy was pushing it off the lift gate, not knowing that was the end of the truck, and he was still going with it. So I don't know if he likes pinball. Maybe he's a video game guy. We don't know. He's a video game guy. But, you know, so whatever. I think we're going to go through the game a little bit and show you some things. And then, really, honestly, I'm just going to take some questions from everybody because I'm tired of talking about the game in a way. You know, I want the game to do its own talking. I want you to play it, to get to know it a little bit. It's the very beginning of what it's going to be. You know, next month, probably a little less than a month, well, about a month from today, we're at Pinball Expo. So, you know, more stuff will be on this game. There's a couple more design elements that are getting added to it that are almost there. Keith, of course, is programming away because unlike program pinball that he did before, on this game, what you have is about 150 RGB LEDs. So that's red, green, blue LEDs. And we actually use the most expensive LED that we can find. And we drive it downward. So it's not driven at a height, it's driven at a low. Because, you know, anybody that put LEDs in their games, you know, you get sunspots and you can't see the ball and everything like that. So when you play this, we want you to certainly see the ball because that's an important element to find a pinball, not just that we're going to look at this. So, you know, Keith has, I don't know, a billion colors or so, they tell me, that he can program every different light to be every different thing at every different show. All the inserts on the game are clear. So when we went to the plastic company to make different things about this, you know, they were all so happy to see me walking in with my checkbook and say, gee, we got a shelf full of these red ones and blue ones and green ones and yellow. We don't want any of that crap. Everything is clear. What? Who does clear on a pinball machine? We do. Really. So, you know, and all the things that we... Hello? Mm-hmm. Who is that? It's not me. So, in all the things that we did, there were a lot of things that we had to create. We've talked about those before. We've done updates about them before. There are still a lot of things to be discovered about the game that haven't been disclosed. One of the things we were kind of waiting for a while, for the last several months, was our production playfield to come in. We were testing the finish on this because with Direct Ink, which is what this is now, this is like, you know, the cabinet guy, as I explained once before. Cabinet guy cuts all the wood, goes to the printing company, and the wood goes through the printer just like your paper. It goes through your printer, and that's how it's printed. So we don't really lose any detail. And then it goes to be encoded. And we found that we needed to use a DuPont product that was an automotive product that's about close to $300 a gallon. And it gets cut a certain way, and there's a whole process to make this happen. But finally, this past Monday, about 100 playfield sets arrived, and another 50 cabinets arrived, and we were really thrilled with the result that we got. And, you know, people have asked me, okay, well, when are we going to get this? And it's taking you know, whatever to do it. And I can't rush some of these things. You know, they're out of our control, and I'm not going to just do it for the sake of doing it because somebody wants the game under their Christmas tree. You know, my hope is that we are shipping a number of games this year. We have a facility that is certainly able to produce, I was told by an industry expert, 60 games a day. So when the guy said that to me, I said, okay, at least he wanted to, you know, before we get to, you know, we're hoping to do 10 or 15 a day. And, it's going to take us 28 people, 21 and a half hours to build the game. That's the calculation for what we're doing. So I don't know how that relates to, all the different products. I know when I took off from Newark Airport yesterday, I looked over to the right, and I saw the beautiful Freedom Tower that's going up on Ground Zero, the former site, the World Trade Center, where the tragedy happened. And, that building didn't have the convenience. I don't know how I think of these things. The building didn't really have the convenience of being developed in secret. You know, it was out there for the whole earth to see as it went up with all its bumps and bruises and warts. And people criticized it, because there's a lot of emotion attached to it, and it's a lot of money, and people said it was going to be ugly and this and that. And when it's almost done rising up and reaching up, the consensus now is it's really beautiful, and it's really cool. And we have had a really great curve on this game where a lot of the things that we showed, when I went to E3 and I went to the Seattle Pinball Show, at the time I was really thrilled to be there with something, proof of concept or whatever. As I look back at that just a few months ago, I had to be out of my mind to be there with that game. It was insane. But we got nothing but positive came out of it. Keith had his head in there with a keyboard, and we had one power supply that fell out, this and that, and everything. Yeah, it makes a good story. What the heck, I don't have a problem developing this product in public. Sharing in real time with everybody what's going on. If somebody had a question, if I could answer it, I answer it. If somebody asked me, whatever it was, the best information I had at the time is what I told. And that's what I'm going to continue to do with it. So let me stop for a second if anybody has any questions, and then we can go a little bit through that. Anybody? Okay. Yes?
This is kind of maybe just asking your opinion. The price point you're selling your game, it's kind of like talking to some people, and we've seen the pictures and everything you put out. It's kind of like the Twilight Zone of this decade. And you're putting out a product with a lot of toys and gadgets, and obviously an expensive display, and
right.
Obviously expensive programming equipment.
Right.
But your price point really isn't different than, say, a Stern LE.
Okay.
And when I look at a Stern LE, which is really, their LE is what a Pro was 3 years ago. So really what they've done is, you've let Stern double the price of their games. And I'm just kind of wondering how you feel about that.
I don't make the market. What really happens is that the market makes its own market. So if, you know, my favorite thing to compare it to, you know, I'm a collector of Montblanc pens. Not to be snobby, but I like to write. I write people letters, believe it or not, by hand. And I like different pens. So, I don't know, this one that I took of me today is one that was like $600. I bought this in Aruba a few years ago. Now, let me ask you something. Is this pen worth $600?
Nope.
Well, one word answer.
Not to me.
No, that is the exact right answer. Perceived value is what makes this world go round. I don't wear the cheapest shirt, but then again, I don't want to be ripped off, and I don't want to pay for something that doesn't have a perceived value. So what happens when you have a product in any marketplace is that the ultimate judge of what something's value is the person that's willing to buy it. And certainly we know, a million people have called me over the years and said, hey, you know, I got this game I want to sell, and I need, you know, $1,800 for it. I says, okay, that's good. Well, you want to buy it? No. Well, it's worth it. Yeah, but, you know, not to me. I'll give you, like, you know, $1,500 for it. You know, somebody else it might be worth $2,000. So this is the magic sauce that makes the world go round. So, you know, I don't have an opinion about it because, and not to be politically correct, because everybody knows that, you know, I'll just tell you what I'm thinking and let the chips fall wherever they are. Even though I'm Jersey Jack, I'm a Brooklyn street operator. You know, really, I guess what has to happen in that case, since you brought it up, is that this product has to go out into the world and find its way and be judged, even though I hate to use that word, okay? And then other products like it need to be judged. And then you all, as consumers, and me as a consumer and a player, need to go to an arcade or a home or wherever we want and decide, where am I going to put my money? Do I want to buy this product or do I want to buy that product? And my hope is that you want to buy all the products because I want to see more. I don't want to see less. I'm not a divider, I'm a uniter, all that kind of stuff you hear politicians say. But the truth is, you know, I'm a positive guy. My blood type, I said before, is being positive. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I try to look at these things, and I try to say, it is. I give blood, and they told me my blood type being positive. Does that make sense? So, you know, I try to figure that all out, but, you know, I can't wrap my head around what the world does. You know, the sun shines out there, and it's beautiful. I just had my face in the sun. But if you take a magnifying glass, and you take that sun, you make a laser beam, and when that thing is focused, it can pierce right through steel. Okay? See, Russ, I work your name with this. It could pierce right through steel, okay? So my focus, the focus of our company, is not to look at anybody else. We don't, honestly, I don't care. I don't think about it. We need to do what we need to do. Whatever you need to do, I hope you buy my game. I hope you play my game. So
well,
that's
what I guess I'm a little worried
about. Wait a minute, I didn't tell you to keep talking. What is this? What's your name? This is the Clay Show and Jack, so...
Yeah. Well, what I'm looking at is I see a lot of value for the price point that you're at.
Okay.
A lot. Okay. Where I look at Stearns and I don't see that value.
Okay, well, go to a Stern seminar.
Well, no, and pose that question. The point I'm making is that they've been doing it over and over.
Right.
So they're obviously making money.
Okay.
I'm worried about you.
Exactly. What happens?
I'm worried about you.
Don't worry about me. But we get out all the money we want. That's not a problem. My biggest problem was proving that we could do a game. You know what's going to happen with money now at my company? I got VCs that are friends of mine that want to put millions of dollars into my company right now. They want a piece. Everybody wants 10%, 8%, 12%, but I don't want their money. If I build 15 games a day, I got a nice little company. We could have Mercedes-Benz or we could have Rolls-Royce. I didn't start this thing to make money. I was fine.
But you didn't start it to lose money either.
Okay, well, you know what? Guess what? That thing sitting right there was more than $2 million for me. Show me in my industry, and I've asked industry experts that are in the business more than me, when the last time in my industry that a real company started, got up off the mat and started, and spent $2.5 million creating the product. I don't know when. It probably was Sega in the 1970s or 80s or something when they had 500 people working on a video game. Maybe. I don't know when that was. And I'm not saying we did something great. I'm not here crowing and tooting my horn. I'm making a statement of fact as an industry observer.
Is there going to be a game two?
Yeah, the game two, I know what game two is. I know what game three is.
Yeah.
You reminded me, you know, when I was going out with my wife and we got engaged, you know, people said, well, when are you getting married? And then you get married, and they say, well, when do you have a kid? And then you have a kid, and they say, well, when do you have a second kid? And then, you know, that's what you just asked me. You know, let me breathe a little bit. Let me get this game going out of the building. You know, because now Game 2 doesn't have to cost us $2 million to develop. Guess what? You know, we licensed Bally Midway parts. Bally Williams parts, sorry. I was thinking Bally Midway is one connected thing because it was. I thought I was getting this library of unbelievable stuff. I thought they were, you know, drawings and schematics and everything. There was nothing there. There was nothing there. There was some on a piece of paper that if you went to the vendor that was still in business when you made that part.
Technical difficulty.
Okay. You know, Ryan is great as a pinball guy. There's a microphone. keep your day job, okay? Whatever that is. So, you know, as can't hear me now. I know what you're doing. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I'll just talk about it. So, you know, as licensing those things, we thought we were taking a shortcut. And it was a great thing because we were able to use patents and different things like that that maybe we couldn't do. Plus, if I told you in the beginning, well, what kind of parts are you using? Well, I don't know. We're using some kind of amazing thing that we're going to make up for. So, you know, look, I'm a service guy. I don't want to put more parts in your toolbox. If I told you we're using Williams parts, you know, that are familiar to you, it's a great thing. Joe Balser and Brian and a couple of our mechanical guys, they kind of redrew everything from the tilt mechanism to flippers to everything. Because everything got a little tweaked. And they became somewhat proprietary to us. So if a target maybe was at 5 degrees, we made it at 4 degrees. So a lot of things we improved. And guess what? That's our intellectual property now. You know, a lot of patents we don't have. And Rick, we have a multi-year and multi-game agreement. And I'm thrilled with him. He's a great guy. Other things you look at in the game that we had to do like that, it was everything. It was reinventing everything. So that was part of the development, what it cost to do this. Game number two, I don't have, guess what? I don't have $2.5 million in the game. Do I lower the price of the game? No, I'm probably going to get my behind kicked for building the first 1,000 games and then after game number 1,000. So look, if it was $2.5 million, let's say you're all economic majors, and you put you amortize $2.5 million into the first 1,000 games. Guess what? That's $2,500 a game built into the bill of materials of this game. Some people, if they saw the bill of materials to this game, they need a body bag next to the game, it's going to die. Okay? The RGB LEDs in the game alone are more than $500 just in parts. Who does that? A crazy guy.
Visionary.
I don't want to say I'm crazy. However,
as you
somebody
should. As you
came
should.
To the shirt. Now, Johnny Norman, stand up. Stand up. This guy, God bless you, he had a stroke and he couldn't walk. Okay?
Yeah.
And his picture's been on my desk and I've been praying for this guy and since March. He walks, man. He's like. To be here, right?
Yes.
This was your thing.
Yes.
Right? And this was your motivation to get better and to walk.
Uh-huh.
All through therapy and everything else.
And
right?
Give you that shirt.
And I will proudly cherish that. I'm going to put it in a frame and hang it on my wall with the 10,000 other things everybody gives me that they don't need. Somebody gave me a ceramic jug last time that's on my desk and all kinds of other things.
Yeah.
Please, you know, I got enough junk. But did that play? Did that do it for you?
I'm doing the math, and it's not adding up, and it just gets me worried. You know what I mean? Like you said, $500 in displays, and you know, $300 with the or $200 a gallon with the clear coat for the clip. You know, you just keep adding that up, and it's like
it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. I mean, it's a lot of money in the
middle. You know, look, when I started the thing, I didn't know what we were doing. That's the other problem. You know, look, if you had a formula. Of what it was, I could have told you like a year and a half ago what the bill of materials were. But until they finished, I didn't really know what the bill of materials were. You know, it was near what I guessed it would be. Because I looked at other things that were being done, and then I added my percentage of what I wanted to do. This game really, the problem with this game is that, if there's a problem, I'll put it in quotes. This is exactly what happens when you hire the absolute best people that you could get and that are motivated and positive and that have a passion, and you leave them alone. You say, go do whatever you want to do. Go do whatever you want to do. I don't really care what you want to do, in fact. Just go do it. It don't take forever, but, you know, do it. So that's what happened. That's what happened. And, you know, I'm very proud of it. I'm very proud of them. I'm very proud of the people that, you know, decided to be a part of it. You know, when there was just Dennis Nordman making a paper house with a piece of wine on the table, and that sold another 100 games, you know, because the guy made a paper dollhouse. And I thought that was cool. I look back at some of those things, and I look at it now, and it seems, you know, it seems special in a way, but it kind of seems silly or
crazy.
And, look, it's part of what we did, how we did it. You know, I have business writers from, I have a friend of mine that works at the Wall Street Journal that wants to do a story on us. His story is not focused so much on pinball. His story is focused more on, let me ask you something, Jack. We're in bad economic times, right? You got what? You got like 1,000 people to give you money for something that they didn't see or didn't play or whatever. Well, I said, yeah, but, you know, pinball is something, the trademark saying pinballsales.com, so we sell everything nobody needs. So, it's a pinball machine. You guys invested in the future of what you believe pinball to be, and you bought a game, you know, and you'll get your game. Hopefully you buy game 2 and 3 and 4 and 5, and hopefully what we're trying to do, we're trying to get these young people to see this game on a location, on a commercial location. Dave & Buster's, Chuck E. Cheese, all kinds of movie theaters all over, places like that, amusement parks, okay? And they walk over to it, or they see it from a distance, and they see what's going on there. And to them it's really cool, because they have all the electronic gadgets. They have more stuff than we ever had. When I was a kid, we'd play with a pot and a pan banging against the walls. Now, you know, everybody's got this kid. I bet he's got an iPhone, this kid. You know, so if they don't have that stuff, you got to overstimulate people today. You know, we're spoiled. We're really spoiled. I know that. So I figured, look, let's do it with all the senses, sensory overload. So really cool sound system, 2.1 audio, you know, HD LCD in the back box with all the animations that we had going, the RGB lighting, the striking cabinet art, all the mechanical toys that are on there, because I wanted to stay traditional. I didn't want to be completely radical where, you know, you just take a play field and you make it an electronic thing. You know, where best love elements of this movie, you know, with the flying monkey that you'll see fly down and grab the ball and bring it up to the delicious castle and lock it in there, and the spinning house and it lands. And then the witch or the east, her feet come out of the house, and you have the throne room, and you have the witch that you melt, and she's the villain, the two magnets under there. I don't want to spoil it for you. You guys play it later. You guys play it later. And I'll be standing around next to it, and, you know, if you think it's good, you know, tell me. And if you think, you know, something about it that you want to see, or an explanation, or whatever, I'll be happy to explain it to you. You know, and that's our first game. And, you know, if that's our first game, I'll probably be standing here at some point in the future, and I'll say to you, well, I'll take this sheet off, and it'll be our second game. And I'll say, remember when I was here with Wizard of Oz, and I said how great that was? Well, now we figured out a way to make it even greater, okay? Because we're not going to take that money and just put it in our pockets. We're going to use that money to innovate and create and keep going. Our guys are already working on things for game 2. And they're crazy because they like to jack. They like to outjack me, I call it. If I want to surprise them with something, what they do is they say, "Hey, you got a minute? Come into my whatever." And I go in there and they wow me with something. And I'm like, "This is crazy. These guys are nuts." You know? So, how about another question? Yes, sir.
Those of us who put an order in for the first game.
Yes.
Will we get any priority position in?
So what will happen is, you know, I'm not going to announce what our second game is before our first game shipments, because I don't think that's a really good idea. You know? Although there's people that actually just want to give me money now for a game to be determined later, which I don't want. Yeah, I don't want. So when you get the game and you got number 618, there'll be an order form in there, and it'll tell you what's going on, and there'll be a whole payment structure there. And there's actually a set date that we have that we know we're going to release that game. So you'll actually know when it's going to be released and what it is, because we'll be in a position to say that on game number two. Where we couldn't really on game number one time right now. Yes. Somebody else? Yes.
Do you see eventually economy of scale where maybe these wonderful games can be more like $4,000? I've got a lot of friends that think this is all cool, but they just go, what, $6,500 or more?
Yeah.
And they just can't justify it.
I know. Market.
But with, if you
I don't know how to do that without taking the game out of the game. So if I took out everything that makes the game really cool, I could do that and buy that game.
Yeah, but as you ramp up in game three and four, you don't see it that way then?
I don't know. You know, I want to keep things... You know, there's a tradition in my industry. There's a guy in Florida that has a manufacturing company that builds redemption games. And when his game makes money, the first thing he does is he raises the price by about $1,000. For no reason, just because he can. Okay? I'm not going to do that stuff. I never like that stuff. I never like when it happened to me as an operator or a distributor. And I remember all that stuff. I don't forget where I came from. So, you know, if there's a way to do it, yes. Maybe as time goes on, these RGB LEDs that we're using are going to come down, and maybe the cost base of them will be $250 instead of $500. Will we be in a position to pass that along or keep the $250 at I don't know. I'm probably I have more of a conscience about that. You know, for operators, we have proven that price is not an object to buying a really great game that makes money. So it goes back to more home customers. Okay, so again, it comes down to the fact, well, maybe I don't have room for this game, but I'll sell two games because, look, used pinball machine values have gone up. And I don't want to know, Clay, why that happened.
Because that happened. Exactly why that happened.
That happened related to your first question.
Exactly.
I know that, but let's not go with it. So anyway, I agree with you. I understand that. I'm not. So, you know, sell two games and buy one of these. You know, I don't know. That's what I would do. Yes.
So, you mentioned that some may ship by the end of the year. My general question is, between part sourcing, cabinets, plate-in software, if whatever you're concerned, what are kind of some of the big remaining items that you guys are
doing? We're waiting for production circuit boards right now, because the boards in the game were designed by our people, so they're proprietary to us. It's not like we went to a board house and had somebody like just design something. So, you know, those go through different revisions and testing and tweaking and all that kind of stuff. So those are a few weeks out. Those are probably right around Halloween. But that doesn't prevent you from building games, you know. So you build what you build, and you plug in boards and do what you do. You know, there's a lot of things that are going to happen in building that just go on. You know, you gotta put together, you know, thousands of assemblies. I mean, you gotta do all kinds of, there's plenty of work to do. There's plenty of people doing stuff like that. Yes.
Again, can you tell us the difference between what we're seeing here and what we're going to see and what you showed us up in
Tampa? So really, you go to the camera, I don't know if you can make that brighter or whatever, put a light up a little bit brighter. Oh yeah, that's pretty cool. Okay, so when you look at the game in this area here, there's a design element that's not there. There's a fence that goes under there because I didn't want to see the wood on that front of that play field by this rainbow. The game itself, you know, physically is all there pretty much.
I think you gotta turn it up.
When you play inside, come to me, I'll explain it to you. But part of the other thing is that some of the lights on here that aren't on, some of the signs that work in the programming, I don't know what Keith's percentage of the programming right now is, because he had to build the whole back end of it. And there's a whole test system in here, so if I, I took the key out. Last night I pulled the fuse, took the key out, and somebody still got into the room to take a picture, to enter the Facebook context of taking the picture. So, you know, even when I go in there, you know, all the back end kind of stuff that happened with this for testing, you know, Martin, you're going to get access to it. You don't have to knock yourself out. Stand there. So, you know, when you do this, you're going to see stuff like that. There's going to be actually tutorials in here how to fix the game. Of course, if the game is broken, that's not going to help you. So, of course, there's still going to be a printed manual.
We have an electrical engineer, somebody in pinball, doing a manual, because he's very, very picky about how to manual with Butch Peel, who I announced in Texas, that's going to be our on-the-road kind of guy. He's involved in writing a manual with a couple of other people, including me, Ben and Harris. I got to tell you, it's been a lot of fun for me, too, because I'm actually on the line putting stuff together, whether it's hammering T-nuts in or... you know, on ball guy fixture or doing other stuff, and it's kind of cool. I didn't really expect that, but it's a lot of fun. So really, you know, the stuff that Keith's involved with is pretty much everything. And I say to Keith sometimes, I don't say it to him anymore. You need help? No, I think I'm doing pretty good. And you know, he'll work. He was in our building last week doing some stuff. These programmers are something else. If anybody has a programmer or knows one, you know, there's no advocate for the guys, and they work relentlessly. If I had to choose one person on planet Earth to do anything with our games and programming, I got to look at that with Bruce Johnson, because he's unbelievable passion, unbelievable talent, unbelievable guy. Really great person. So, really happy. So going back to this, there's not a lot to answer your question. There's not really a lot. You know, you're talking software right now, to make it be what we're going to make it. You know, you have, I don't know, 500 different kind of speech things going on and sound. Like Chris Graham is finally going to get together, not finally, but he's getting together with Keith to do the iterations, to play speech and things like that. Because right now, some of it's thrown around, but it's not. And again, this is what happens when you see sausage meat, you know. So that famous thing where, you know, you guys are getting to see behind the scenes, and you deserve to do that. You know, Washington was a product. You get to watch how it's made, and they give you a little thing on how it was made. But they didn't tell you how it was made. They tell you how they want to tell you how it was made. I'm telling you how it was really made. You know, so that's what we're going to do. So you got any other questions? So, yes?
What about the crystal ball you told me to do about that?
Yep, it's gonna do something. They're working on it. It's gonna do something. They're working on some kind of late show with it. That's still not concocted yet. That's a good point. That's not coming yet. But if I app it by the amusement park show, they tell me that's gonna be done. So you know, I some nights I lay up at night and I think about munchkins and crystal balls. And, I don't know if that's normal, like for a 15-year-old. Really, these munchkins are getting in trouble. Yes. Anybody? Yes. Are you shy? Question? Enough?
Oh, no, we got one over here, Jack.
Yes.
You have a 1,000 limited edition in Emerald City Run. Are future games going to have that 1,000 limited edition?
Game 2 that we're doing lends itself to do that. I don't really believe in doing everything as a limited edition. You know, I know I was partially guilty for some of that years ago in bringing that along, and I saw some reason to do that on certain games because they, you know, we had the collectors that wanted to buy it. But, you know, what we did was really kind of simple where it's only, there's not this huge chasm between the two. So, you know, we had one school of thought that said, well, there's not a bear to differentiate it, but the other school of thought is, well, I got my money's worth, and plus, you know, I got a limited game, and I feel, you know, I got 1 of 1,000 of the first game that this company made, and, you know, so it has a collectible value, you know, perceived collectible value. So, we don't know that. We'll find out.
If you do go that route, you know, we have 414. Are we going to have
yes,
the first pick?
That's what I was going back to say before. You know, we'll get first pick on the number.
And the game. Limited edition.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Jack, you said that you don't want to tell us what number 2 is, but maybe you can give us a little tease on license versus unlicensed.
Not going to do. Next question.
Yes. Come on.
Chuck, when do you see games going out on test location?
When I think they're ready, which is probably, you know, the best answer that I should have said a long time ago. I'm learning as I go along. But, you know, I think it's within a couple weeks or something like that, because I see
what's going on, and where I want it to be when it goes out. Because, you know, you want it to get its best chance. You know, we have, you know, an amazing location, the best and first one, and it's a very competitive arcade. And if the game makes money there, other pinball machines are in that arcade, I know what they make. So if it goes in there and it makes what I want it to make, and that's the beginning of it, then I know we got something. If it goes in there and it doesn't make any money, then I have a different problem.
Might there be a test location in California?
It might be. I got, you know,
museum.
I'm from
the museum.
Country. And there might be. You know, we're probably going to keep the first ones closer to home because we don't want them. We don't want them to be pulled apart.
Well, it's in my
house. Okay, that's cool. Yeah.
So I know the blue pop up
there. Right.
Up the stand.
Right.
Probably.
Right.
You know, wall save or something.
Right.
On the right side, it says federal escape. It would be a good thing
he's got an amazing rule set, you know, and it's very cool. There's a lot of stuff in there. It's very deep, and it's what you expect from one of his games. And he has not been told by me that on a certain date he's done. You know, I don't care if we got a game before and he wants to add more stuff to his game. He can. He can go absolutely completely out of his mind. And a lot of what he's done, it's almost like, I'm trying to understand this because I don't understand how it works, but it's kind of like prepping a room for painting, you know, where he got to now. And now painting the room is not as difficult as the prep in a lot of ways. So a lot of developments coming together. This is not the latest software. This was the latest software, you know, as of like last Saturday. You know, I'm certain by now, you know, the games that are playing in New Jersey got all this stuff going on. The Queens game at home's got all this stuff going on. And this and that. You know, it's literally, you know, when he was in our building doing stuff, it's literally, you know, I could see stuff this morning and then I could see stuff this afternoon. So remember again what I was saying before, when the programmer, Keith programmed, you know, The Simpsons, let's say, you know, he had lights, but he didn't have to decide all the colors they were going to be and make all of that be. He didn't have all the animations. He didn't have the depth of the speech bubbles, let's say. So he's got, you know, somebody wrote an article this morning, I don't envy the work that Keith has to do. Keith eats that stuff up. And that's what he lives for. That's his DNA. He loves this thing. Yeah.
How easy is it going to be to update the software?
Very easy.
Is it a USB?
Email it to the USB. There's no patent on that or anything either. The game will be able to do it over the internet. Yes.
What's your percentage of operator-based sales to home?
So I think right now on the limiteds, you know, maybe there's about 40 or 45 games, something like that. But we had to count up how many village sellers. We had to order from those people. Because every operator that bought one of our games, we didn't even village sell for free on the first game from all the village sellers. So actually, the other day, we were placing an order with Mars to figure out how many we actually needed.
So really, it's a very small percentage.
Well, operators are not going to... I'm an operator. You know what? Show me.
All right, well,
show me.
It backs up to this question. You said you have this expectation in the arcades that you wanted to make this much money. Does that really matter at this point? I mean...
Oh, money matters. You can't... That's what drives an operator.
No, but what I mean, but your operator percentage is so small compared to collector percentage.
So if I have a friend of mine that operates 300 movie theaters, takes one and it makes one. You know what's going to happen? Next year, two Wizard of Oz movies come out. You know what he's going to say to me? Send me 300 games. That's what I would say. You'll read about it and you'll play. That's what's going to happen. All it's got to do is work and make money. Two simple things. It's got to work. I know how the game's built. I'm an electronics technician. I fixed thousands of pinball machines in 37 years. Guess what? You think the game's going to work?
Yeah.
I designed games that made all kinds of money. I designed the Wizard of Oz pusher at a company I was partners in 2 years ago. Russ is still working. The game's doing $5,000 a day. Okay, Wizard of Oz pusher. People in the group were saying, hey, yeah, right, exactly. Guess what? It's an amazingly fun game. Every arcade, every Dave and Buster should go out and buy one today, those guys. They should get their nickels together and buy the thing and throw out all the junk they're buying. They should go buy those games. That's what I want to build. I want to build fun things that relate to everybody, that are just cool. You know, and make operators money. If operators don't get good food, if they don't have a good game, they can't make money. And if they can't make money, they can't stay in business. And you can't go to their arcade and play games. I'm an operator. I understand what it is. I just remember
like
Twilight
Zone, that when it came out.
Okay, so here's what happened with Twilight Zone. We got to go into the history books. Pat Waller, a good friend of mine who was renting his building in Harvard, Illinois, okay? He did Adam's Family. It sold wildly. And all the geniuses in this suit said, you know what? Let the guy do anything he wants to do. And they let him do anything he wanted to do. And Pat is amazing. Amazing design, okay? To me, a spectacular game. But you know what? It was too complicated. It was too hard. It was a failure on the route because it was too frustrating for somebody to play.
But now
we can't have a collectible because all of us geeks can't beat the thing, so every one of us has to have a Twilight Zone in our collection.
Right, and that's the point I was
This game's not hard to play. This game's an easy game to play. This game's a real easy game to play. We took the scores down, too. You don't shoot the ball and get 100 million. You get rewarded like in Meet the Fockers, from ninth place, you get the trophy. you're going to get 10 points, 1 point. I told you guys, one of my favorite games in my basement is Buckaroo. When I get that 1,000 point thing to light up, I thought, like, you know, like the fireworks are going to go off. I played my guts out to make that happen. Okay, so we want to have some kind of achievement, some kind of relevancy. Okay, of what the score is. 1939 movie, classic. The score's down. I don't know if we're going to do that with every game. Maybe, probably. We'll see how it works. You know, it's been very, very well received. But, you know, we get people coming to our building, kids playing games. You know, the Swisher guy brings his kids, and this one, that one. We get outsiders that don't know anything, they didn't see anything, and they come and like, wow, can I play this game?
What are you mean?
Can you tell I'm from Brooklyn?
Checking.
So that was one of the design elements I wanted, that I wanted a little game behind the game. And, you know, I know how to play pinball, so... I'm sorry, I'm on bad to you guys. So you got a couple of magnets under the witch. She's going to play around with you. She's going to make things happen. You got to get up to the ramp shot up there, which is right there. I'm going to get up there if I actually finesse it. You know, Mark had a good comment yesterday. So it's not a strength issue. It's an accuracy issue. But, you know, I'm going to go into the game. I'll show you some different things about it. You know, if I get into... Can you see this thing going on here? I don't know if you can actually tell straight. You can't really see the house. And you can't really see... All right. So, I don't know. Maybe we'll... We'll see if we can get on this side. What? No.
Can
you see the house?
Yeah.
So you lock the first wall. Now the monkey's flying down. Grabbing the ball, bringing it up to the witch's castle.
It's not on the screen.
I know, that's why I said you got one camera pointed in one place. You guys got to play this. It's very, again, it's a hard game to translate to a video.
Remember, the journey is full
of good art for three.
What? Okay. one player and two balls. This way, it gives everybody a chance to play, and you guys are not going to get into like a whole thing going on. And we have it set right now so that you can see the GIs, you know, these general illumination lights. Here we have them. We just have them going through colors right now, so you can get a little bit of an idea how they're going to look. But obviously, you know, when it's going, you got different things going on the playfield, lighting-wise and feature-wise. Two magnets under the witch. So when you hit her, she's going to she plays around with the ball. You know, and makes it do a lot of wacky things. And, you know, so I'm pretty proud of what they did. I'm really happy with what they did, even though.
Hey, Jack.
I like it.
Is there a way to bypass some of the video?
Hang on, though. Okay. Is there a way to
bypass some of the video? Like hit the filter or something?
Yeah, it'll be that way. Yeah. I mean, you know, look, we're all players, and sometimes you don't want that in there.
Right.
Maybe it slows the game down or something like that. But, you know, the however is if the monkey is taking the ball, you know, I'm not going to do but watch the screen. You know? So there's going to be certain elements and times where, you know, I like a flow game, I like a stop-and-go game. We all have collections, so we all have different games in the collection. So, you know, it's hard to, again, go back to the beginning and be that everything to everybody because, you know, we're not going to, some people are not going to like the theme, believe it or not, because they don't like the game. You know, there's games inside that have no theme that I really like because they have certain elements of them. So I never really made a pinball machine that I hated because if I like pinball, I'm not going to hate anything. So. Yes?
How did you come up with the Wizard of Oz theme?
So the famous story about the Wizard of Oz theme is Drew Maniscalco, who works for us, he's a great guy, he worked for a lot of companies over the years in the industry. When I was thinking about starting a pinball company, and that goes back to about, I guess it was, it probably was at Expo 2010, when I was really seriously thinking about that. And I asked him to find out what licenses were available. And he got in touch with Warner Brothers, and they had a whole list of really cool stuff. And I said to him, you know, get me a Wizard of Oz. And his comment, his famous comment was, really? So, you know, that was the overwhelming, happy response to my request. And that's a guy that does license. So. Yes?
Can you speak about, like, with the internet connectivity versus how it might tie in with, like, multiplayer play, possibly?
We can do anything possible. Yeah, I mean, it's not Dick Tracy stuff. You know, you have a computer in there, you have an off-the-shelf motherboard in there that has USB, wireless USB. You know, anything you can do on the internet, potentially, and practically, you can do this. I mean, we have people working on some of that stuff now to make that happen. You won't see it today. You might see that revealed at all the shows and things like that. But yeah, it's all in the mix. You got to do that. I think you got to do that. Maybe I'm wrong. Yes.
Don't you think that could actually go a long way to like authenticating like scoring or like top scorers?
Yeah, and you know, Martin had some good ideas along those lines too about how many players a game could be and how it could be set and different things like that. And you know, we can put devices in the game to make sure that the glass is actually on the game and not just playing the game by hand. I'm not talking about switches, I'm talking about different electronic sensing devices that we can tell the level of sound in the game. So it's a certain level, believe it or not, that we know the glass is on the game. So it's some crazy stuff that these guys come up with. But it's not like Dick Tracy wristwatch radio stuff. Yes?
Well, the playfield of the show here, so this is like nodes, and of course there might be something on the LCD, but is it going to be a node-based game? Is it going to have a typical key? Having
yes.
Modes?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. I wish Keith was here. He didn't want to come with me. He's too busy coding the game, so he didn't want to come.
Do you know how many nodes will be
a lot.
A lot.
A lot. That's the number I was told. A lot. A lot of it. Yes.
Did you say this is a three ball or a five ball?
No, it's a five ball game. There's five balls in it. It's a five ball game. Yeah. Oh, you mean when you're talking about play?
Well,
you walk up to it in an arcade and play three balls or five balls?
Yeah.
So obviously we give an operator every option that's possible. You know, after we test it and actually see if the thing does make money, we'll give our opinion, my opinion, of what you should set it at as an operator and what you should charge for it to maximize your earnings. What you do with it, you know, hopefully nobody puts it out of the court. Yes.
What language is the program working on? And are you going to open source the code?
No. We're gonna do something when we do a generic, but when we do a non-licensed game. You can't do it on a licensed game because, you know, you don't want to do it. You just can't do it. You know, there is a plan to do something along the line of what I said when I first started this. So it could happen. I never say never. It could happen. There's some people in the company battling against it, though, and some people believing in it, including me. So we'll see what happens as we go along. But it's definitely something that we're possible.
How many are shipping to Europe?
A lot.
Half?
No, not half. I tell you what, you know, I haven't really tried to get a lot of international distributors because I want them to have a game. So, you know, I've talked to a lot of those people and they're all very excited, and you know what they want to do? They want to see it. They want to play it. They want to know what it is. And I think when they see it and they play it and they know what it is, they'll make some huge commitments to take games. You know, and that's what basically every single one of them told me. So, you know, you just prove it. Show me what you got, and show me it works, and show me that it makes money, and, you know, I'm there. Yes?
I have two lighting questions. Can the topper change color?
This one can't, no.
But what?
Yeah, this one won't. It's green. This is the animal suit.
And behind the logo on the back glass, does that have any kind of lighting effect, or that's just a simple?
Behind the logo, no, it's going to be just that right now. It could be. We you know, there's you can kind of see through it, and there's a strip of LEDs. So we could, you know, we could put a strip of, in a different game, you know, RGB LEDs and, you know, make light shows and everything. I think I gave him enough to do right now without trying to invent more. It's tough for him to do what he can't get through. So when he's got nothing to do, that's big things that these guys think of. It's like what you were talking about. Like, how can we add more to this thing? You know, and I'm like, how can we finish this thing? Welcome to manufacturing. That's what it always is. Anybody else want anything? Alright, so I think kind of like this is the point of the thing where I throw t-shirts to everybody.
Or everybody mobs.
Gently.
We never got a t-shirt from us. We never got a t-shirt.
And bought a game.
We never got a t-shirt for us. Oh, yeah, damn shirt.
Well, I just wanted to thank everybody. That's all. Just, you know, we got to go. Thank you all. I really appreciate all the positive energy and all the good things, and let's just keep going. Let's push pinball over to hell, and let's make the whole world know about pinball.
Hopefully, I know enough people to argue.
God bless you.
I know. When's George Gomez next?
Excuse me?
George Gomez.